Blog Talk Radio.
Jeremy Espy, and for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Jerry?
Paulie? How are you? You know, living the dream. Living the dream.
We all try to live a dream day in and day out. We're expected to be joined by actor Jose Sanchez, plays the quarterback Malik Wright on the hit TV show The Game. Jose is going to come by and talk about the show and talk about what's been going on with him since the last season of The Game. And also, we got to talk about Roy Halladay. Roy Halladay, a no-hitter, the second no-hitter in postseason history. The last deal was Don Larson, who threw a perfect game back in 1956 with the Yankees. Last guy to do it. So it's been a long time. You're talking about 54 years. The 54th anniversary actually is on Friday. So, I mean, first time Roy has ever pitched in the playoffs, and he got his opportunity, and game one, he's made the best of it. He threw a no-no. Only person he let on was Jay Bruce, who actually walked on a full count in the fifth inning. But the guy was superb. I mean, no bigger stage at the playoffs than Roy Halladay stepped on the scene, first time doing it, and he throws a no-hitter. And that last out was tough. That was a tough out they got there, that last out.
You know, well, you don't want to say, you know, certainly this was a great game for him, but this has been, I think, what the Phillies expected, and they traded for him, and he has demonstrated throughout, you know, his certainly the last 3 years, and this year in Philadelphia, that this is who he is. I mean, you hate to look forward at this year and say, had they had him last year, and Oswald or him and Cliff Lee, then things certainly may have been different with the Yankees. That was what the Phils were the missing ingredient last year was really the solid pitching, a solid number two, really. But with a guy like him, you have to really project out and say, he knows this is where he wanted to be his whole career. So this was exciting, but I think for a Roy Halladay, certainly don't expect this, but you definitely want the win. You were expecting to win. I was expecting to win.
It was definitely a well-pitched game by Roy, and obviously it was a well-pitched game by Roy. But yeah, exactly, you don't expect a no-hitter. You expect a dominating performance, of course. He's your ace, your staff ace. But do you expect a no-hitter? No, not at all. And Roy Halladay, he stepped on the scene and like I said, first time in the playoffs, man, he made the best of it. He made the best of it. And, man, if they get pitching like this from H2O, that's Halladay, Hamels, and Oswalt, the big three, obviously you're not going to get no hitters. But you're expecting great performances by the top three pitchers on the staff. And Roy Halladay started off, and let's see if Oswalt can one-up him And the only way he could one-up him is a perfect game. But let's see if Roy Oswalt does what he has to do in game two and see if he can pitch a gem. But right now the Phillies, this team, they finished the year great. I mean, they finished the year very well. And they did what they had to do, man. And this is a team that many expect to get back to the World Series for the third time in a row. I would be shocked if they don't go back.
We didn't talk much Phillies during the year, and I think part of the ball, we have, you know, off-air little discussions. But there's certainly this team, there is an expectation that really, you know, this is where their season begins. This is when you really need to start talking baseball, Phillies baseball, and be critical when you need to be, because the regular season, they don't get into the postseason. They don't get into if they don't make it to the World Series, there was no point to the wins, to the spectacular season. This is a team that was built and designed to be in the World Series, period, point blank. Let's not kid ourselves and get caught up in the first game of the postseason. Sure, we had a great game, but this is game one. I mean, there's much more to do, and certainly after how they were, in my opinion, embarrassed against the Yankees, I would slow down. I'd caution everyone to remember.
You got 10 more games to win.
They're going to face, you know, a very good American League team, most likely project out to be the Yankees.
I don't know about that. Yankees are our team right now struggling with their rotation. And you got the Twins and Devil Rays and the Rangers, decent teams, especially the Twins. And so we'll see what happens there. But let's take a quick caller. Hello, John, go for it.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I don't want to take anything away from the pitching performance today by Holiday. It was a great performance. But I think the thing that's being lost in it is the fact that the big three, Hadley, Howard, and Victorino, would combine 2-for-11. That's not going to get it done in the playoffs.
Not going to get it done, but with your pitcher performances like you got today, it really doesn't matter, but you're right. I mean, ultimately, in order for this team to be successful and to ultimately get to the World Series, you're going to need more production out of those guys.
With all due respect, this is what plagued them against the Yankees.
I mean, especially Ryan Howard. When they won the World Series, he had a great postseason against the Yankees, and last season, he was very inconsistent. And at 2-for-11, that's why I say I think if you're going to sit there and say this was a great performance, look at the box score, and you know this very easily could have turned into a loss.
You're not going to
play well.
You're going to depend on pitching. You're going to depend on pitching, but this team
you
is
have
built
the pitching.
As a run scorer.
You definitely had the pitching, and Victorino was sensational today, and the bottom of the lineup was good as well. And so, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but hey, enjoy this no-hitter. Enjoy this, and let's go on to the next game, because I think this is going to be a great postseason run for this Phillies ball club. Thank you for your call. Just enjoy this postseason, because again, it's only one game, and you can't get too excited over one game.
I think as the weeks come ahead, we're certainly going to be mixing in, you know, the playoffs here for baseball. But the long-term concern, I think, if there's going to be any real concern for this Phillies team, I don't see it with the pitching. I think Oswalt, if he's been here. Holiday is showing you what his makeup is. But there's been inconsistencies in the last three postseasons in the hitting. And this was not, I don't think, the start Charlie Mayo wanted to get off to.
I mean, but at the end of the day, I mean, if you're going to get starting pitching and the bullpen, pitching in general is what's going to take you home and take you to the World Series and ultimately win you a World Series. And if you look at this Phillies team, pitching-wise, there's not too many teams stacked up against them. I mean, you've got three top starters. Three. I mean, you look at Cole Hamels. Everybody forgets back in 2008, Cole Hamels was a stat ace, and he was a horse. And he was the guy that got them to the World Series and ultimately helped them win the World Series. So, I mean, people forget about that, and he's the guy who's going to be the number three starter in this series. So, and he's the guy who pitched tremendously in this season. I mean, he didn't get the run support that you would want.
Oh, absolutely.
But he pitched tremendously in this season. He had a great year. And then you add Oswalt to the mix. I mean, you have three legitimate starters here, man. And I think H2O is what's going to put the Phillies over and ultimately win them the World Series title. I really do.
Well, I think that...
We're expected to be joined by Jose Sanchez, actor from the game. Show's expected to come back on BET, and it should be interesting to get his insight on that show and see what's going on with him. And also, we definitely got to get to the big matchup last week, Eagles-Redskins. We definitely got to get to that. We definitely will talk about that. And we can start talking about it now, actually. If you look at it, it was a game, both teams, a lot of emotion there. Obviously, Donovan McNabb returning to Philadelphia. He got the standing ovation. Not surprised by that. I expected that from the Philadelphia fan base. I mean, a lot of people nationally and throughout the country are surprised. But I expected them to do that. I expected them to give the guy his just due. I mean, he deserves it. Let's be real. He deserved it. But he didn't have a great game here. Didn't play that great. I mean, only threw 425 yards, but he had one touchdown. He had that key scramble there that got them the big first down and ultimately got them the victory. But Donovan, not a great performance, but if you're the Eagles, you have some concerns with Michael Vick going down. And once Michael Vick went down, you felt like the life just went out of the stadium and just went out of the team. So when he went down, it was Kevin Cobb came back in and played okay. A lot of drop-offs, dump downs to the fullback, the tight ends, and the running backs. And not a lot of down-the-field stuff with his great receivers. But ultimately, he tried to get them back. He didn't play great. Played okay. But it wasn't enough. And Donovan McNabb and the Redskins got the victory. And kudos to Donovan. And Donovan said afterwards in the locker room that teams, that people are entitled to some mistakes. And he believed that the Eagles made a mistake and traded him. And Donovan, I think I agree with you.
Well, I mean, you're seeing. And it was another game that you know, I think, you're seeing the Kevin Cobb, I guess, of 2010. It's almost an anomaly because last year you see the guy and he's throwing down the field more accurate. It didn't even look like, you know, the same player. And if I'm a Philadelphia Eagle, I'm concerned. You know, I'm worrying about what's happening here. And where this team goes, sans Michael Vick, they look ridiculously ordinary. And as I told you, Paul, this defense to me, I'm very concerned. I don't see this defense playing well right now. I think the Redskins' offense was atrocious, and the defense really they didn't dominate. They didn't force turnovers. They're not playing well. The offense is anemic without Vick, and you're seeing that. They can't move the ball consistently. With Vick, it's like, you know, it's a tale of two teams.
And Vick is a guy who, like you said, has had a great year. And he just can't play that reckless. I mean, you can't. And DeSean Jackson told him he can't be taking hits like that. And if you're Michael Vick, you have to be smarter than that. I mean, you're not a running back. You can't take the physical pounding of a running back. So you got to be careful, man. And what Mike Vick did the other day in terms of, I mean, he got hammered. He got hit hard, smashed by the two defenders. But he has to be smarter than that ultimately, because if he wants to stick around and be a healthy quarterback and have a successful year and play in a 16-game season, he's got to definitely protect himself a lot better than he did, and he can't continue to play that way. It's just too reckless, and ultimately it's going to get him hurt.
No, and not just get him hurt. I mean, it's going to – again, you are talking about a guy. This is where we do say, you know, his body, though, Paul, is of a 30-year-old man. His NFL career might be that of a 28-year-old, but the body is 30. I mean, and also the body is not used to these hits. This is a, you know, this is a guy who has not taken hard hits in 2 years. And now, I think more than ever, you know, especially in the last two games, people are gunning for Vic because they are seeing what a piece of the offense he is. So when he leaves that pocket, I think many teams' first reaction is, let's get him out. Let's hit him and hit him hard. And though they were, I mean, he was pancaked between two players.
Well, at any time a quarterback is out in open space and you have a shot at him, most people are going to take it. And they're going to try to hit the quarterback as hard as they can. And that's exactly what happened. They hit Vic as hard as they could, and they smashed him. He got pancaked. And it was almost like it was a Redskin sandwich, basically. And Vic went down a rib injury, expected to miss about 2 weeks, maybe 2 to 6 weeks. There was talk possibly that he may play this week, but Andy Reid said he's still in some pain, and so whether he plays or not is still kind of up in the air. But again, it was a very interesting scene there. Donovan got the standing go. He deserved it. And I thought I would have to make a Michael Vick song. But Donovan, like I predicted, the Redskins would win. And they did. And Donovan got his victory. And this is for you, Donovan.
Say McNabb, everybody. Say McNabb, everybody. He is the guy. If the Eagles want to fly, everybody say McNabb.
So I mean, the song is still alive and well.
Let me, Paul. Let's back up a minute, because I mean, I think I know the answer to this question, but I do think it's important. Where are the Eagles if they had Donovan McNabb now?
Say it again.
Where are, in your opinion, so, you know, when you're Steve McNabb, you're also, do you see them doing much better right now with him?
Well, you're talking about the Eagles as they're presently constructed?
Sure. This Eagles team.
Well, defensively, they struggled last year, and with McNabb, and defensively, they're going to struggle again this year. They've shown that they can't stop the run. So that's very obvious and very evident. They have also shown that they can stop the pass. But they also shown, ultimately, that this defense is struggling. And the Redskins were just pounding the ball down their throat. And would it be different with Donovan McNabb? Maybe not. Maybe not. Because, again, I think this is a team that kind of wanted to retool, and they have a lot of young talent on their team. So in terms of would it be different without Donovan, probably not. It probably wouldn't be different. I would acknowledge that at this point. But I think you have to see, like in the offseason, this team made some moves. I mean, they traded away Sheldon Brown, and they just went in a different direction. They went into basically a young direction. And this was a team that essentially was retooling. We're rebuilding, but they'll tell you retooling. So in a lot of ways, it probably would not make a difference. You're right.
And the only reason I say that is because, you know, I think it's important that we do recognize that with or with it. I mean, I think with Michael Vick, the only reason it's different is because there is a difference between Michael Vick's game and Donovan McNabb's game. There always was, and there always will be. But I think that, you know, this Eagles team, the way it's constructed, I think more so on the defensive side of the ball than on the offensive side of the ball, isn't a fit anymore for a player like Donovan McNabb because of his age. Because, you know, he can make plays maybe with parts of this offense, but the running game, the offensive line has got a lot of work under their belt. The running game, you know, it's pretty evident that, sure, Sean McCoy is certainly got a lot of upside, but he's still only in his second year. The receivers are strong, but they're only going to be really as strong as the other parts of their offense. And the defense is a project. I mean, this is not going to be, you know, the Eagles defense that I think Philadelphia is used to seeing.
Well, obviously, this is a defense.
And they have, Paul, they have invested a boatload of money in a player like Kevin Cobb. And at some point, you know, the economics demand that they recognize what kind of player they have in this guy. And whether keeping him on the bench is not doing the Philadelphia Eagles organization justice. They have to know what they have in this guy.
Well, and I said that, and I was kind of a proponent of keeping, returning Kevin Cobb as a starter because of that fact, because of the money you have invested in him, because you essentially traded your franchise quarterback for him to step in and for him to be the player that you wanted him to be. But as of right now, you look at it, I mean, he's going to have growing pains. That's what young quarterbacks have. That's what they do. That's a part of their situation. That's who they are. They have growing pains. And right now, he's struggling a little bit. Didn't have a great game, but did have an opportunity at the end to get them the victory. Jason Vaughn almost made a circuit catch in the end zone. But if you look at it, Kevin Cobb, he played like a young quarterback on Sunday. A lot of drop-offs. Didn't let plays progress. Didn't throw the ball downfield a lot. A lot of drop off to the tight end and to the fullback and to McCoy, and so, you know, and looking at that situation and looking at everything there, you saw a young quarterback. You definitely saw a young quarterback on display on Sunday, and I believe if Michael Vick wasn't hurt, I thought the Eagles probably would have won that football game, because you just sense that the drive that Michael Vick got hurt, that the Eagles, the offense was about to get this thing right and start making things happen. And unfortunately, it didn't happen.
Well, but look what the Redskins did outside of the first two drives with McNabb, and it was a very takeaway first 12 minutes, 10 minutes of that game, Paul. And the Redskins certainly – and then that's the thing. Like, when you look at Donovan playing, you said in the beginning, he didn't have a very impressive game. I mean, he didn't throw even for 200 yards. I didn't see his game as overwhelming or overpowering the Eagles. I thought, their defense, the Philadelphia Eagles defense, has not gotten it done in one game this year. And they do not look like a defense that I think this NFL is overly afraid of.
Well, it's definitely not a top-notch defense in Philadelphia. And I would agree with you on that. It's definitely not a top-notch defense there. And it's a defense that struggled on Sunday. I mean, they played okay. I mean, they only let up 17 points, but they really got gashed on a run. But like you said, other than essentially three plays, you have the punt return that set up the first touchdown to Cooley. You had the long bomb to Armstrong, young receiver there. But not many big plays for the Redskins in that game. The only such problem that they ran into is the Eagles, is they couldn't stop the run. If they would have stopped the run, they would have been in better position and better shape in that football game. But they didn't stop the run. And not stopping the run cost them the game.
Well, and that's been, you and I, we both know, that's been the microcosm. That's the weakness in this team. Their defense, it's very well known, and I'll put the onus, and I'll be the one to say it right now, it's Stuart Bradley. I mean, you hear there is a lot of talk in the offseason about how this defense was going to be different once he got back. And, well, he's been back, Paul, and, I mean, the touchdown Cooley made him look. Cooley embarrassed him on that touchdown.
Well, Cooley did make him look a little foolish there on that touchdown.
And he is, when you watch those running plays, a lot of times, oftentimes, he is 4 or 5 yards off the ball. I mean, he's being pushed around. And a lot of that, again, can it really be just on the onus of him? I don't think so, and I'll say that a lot because, well, you know as well as I do, Paul, it has to do with the guys up front and the defensive line. They're not, to me, getting off the ball. I don't see this team playing that well.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, like I said, defensively, you didn't, coming into the season, you didn't expect much defensively from this team. You really didn't. You really didn't expect much defensively from this team coming into the season. So it's not really a surprise how the defense is playing. You're not really surprised because you kind of knew it. You kind of knew it. So,
well,
again,
but,
defensively.
Well, Paul, you're surprised. The only thing I will say is, what I'm surprised at, and you may be right, the defense was certainly the weakest part, but I have to tell you, this defense is porous.
It's not a good defense. Definitely not a good
defense.
There
is a lot of work that has to start getting done. They really need to reassess the line. They went out. I will still criticize them. They did not, and they really, I think, made a lot of mistakes in terms of not going out. They signed no one in the offseason. They made no real moves to put this defense, and what is pretty obvious in linebacker and defensive line. I mean, they get Ernie Sims out of the draft, but Ernie Sims is Ernie Sims. I mean, he's not a great player. He's not an all-pro. He's not the guy that I think the Eagles – if you say, looking in off seasons past when they want to go out and get someone, when they target, he's not a guy I don't think this organization targeted. I think he kind of fell into their lap, and sure, he's a good player. He's got some good talent, and he can help them. But he wasn't their answer. They made last year, they made moves to get linebackers, but they don't address long-term problems, which is the defensive line. They have Trent Cole, who is a good player, all pro, probably could do more with more support, but there's nothing on the defensive line. I think that if you're an Eagles fan, you look for and you say, is this the real defensive line, or are you kidding me? You and I have gone kind of back and forth in terms of the McNabb in the offense, but I don't know, Paul. I mean, if Vic can't get back, it's another loss this week. And then now, I mean, I think teams, too, also have – they know, McNabb's number – or, I'm sorry, they know Vic's number. Hit him hard. Hit him a lot. The defense is going – you're going to get 70 points against the Eagles defense, and that's a minimum. And that's when you throw 128 yards – on a Redskins offense that looks horrible. But you're probably going to get 20-plus points a week if you have an offense. If you're the juggernaut that is the Lions, you could score 30-some points. And that's when the defense should have locked them down. That's why I say when you go into this organization, I think at some point, with Michael Vick, unless they're going to trade him, which he's a free agent at the end of this contract, I mean, if they're going to trade him, they better do it this week. They better start looking very deep at the Cobb experiment and really asking themselves, what's the plan here? We're handing this guy $12 million. We traded away Donovan McNabb. Vic's a free agent. What are we doing here? I mean, Reed says he wants to give the team the best opportunity to win now. Well, not with this defense. And where are they going next year? I mean, they're not making it into the Super Bowl. I told you I don't think they're making it into the playoffs. This defense... forget about it. I mean, they're one defensive injury away from going from borderline horrible to absolutely positively horrible. They lose an Asante Samuel, they lose an Ernie Sims, or they lose someone even for two or three games, and you're talking don't even worry about it. So I have severe, if you will. This game was, I guess, my wake-up call. It was sad. I thought the Eagles behind Vic were certainly going to handle their business, and I was excited to see it. And the sad part was you couldn't, partially because of the injury, And now what we have and what we have to sit there and go through is, well, you know, without Vic, look at what we're going to deal with. This is going to be our season. And coming off of the last couple of years, I'm not so sure this is the season I want to have. I mean, it's going to be hard to go through a season like this without a Michael Vick and watch this team just struggle at every aspect and then let teams, you know, wipe the field with the defense. We look at, you know, at this organization. I always go back to Jeffrey Lurie. This is a gold standard organization, Paul. This is, you know, not this year, not really last year. Last year they struck lightning in a bottle, and I think they knew that, and that's one of the biggest reasons they did let go of McNabb. And now you're left with, well, if they're not going to start spending money again, which has always been, you know, a conundrum for the Eagles, are they going to live off their reputation? They have the right to, but they need to start being more forthright, I think, with the fans and with the organization. I think people are getting to the point the boos are going to start coming every week, and you know, how much longer until people start to see this? They see, here we go again. Here's that organization that's going to, you know, they're going to try to win us on smoke and mirrors. So, I mean, we certainly, I know I certainly want to hear from some of the fans. I'm going to change of pace. Paul's giving me the nod here, says give out the numbers. I want to go and, Paul says, I want to take a break, see what you can do. 646-727-3070. Certainly you can email the show. We are sad to say, if anything, I'm sad to say that the Eagles season might. We can forget about Paul maybe saving McNabb. We may be killing this season. We may ask that Paul goes back into the studio soon, and he may have to save the Philadelphia Eagles season. We're approaching the holiday time, and maybe St. Nick can bring us at least a couple of games stretch where we have something to be proud of, because I watched the last quarter of that game and was frustrated. You watched the Lions game and you think, like, if you're a real fan, you look at that game and say, they should have lost that game. You know, they had no real business winning that game because they really did play, in my opinion, bad enough to lose that game. They were up handily. They should have won. They didn't put the game away. And, you know, and Andy Reid's sitting around and he's playing the card of, well, we have Vic. And Vic gets injured, and now it's just, I think, an organization in the Eagles that they are in sheer, utter chaos. And look around the NFL, and, I mean, the Giants are in the same boat. The Cowboys look like they finally found themselves. The Skins have McNabb, and so that division is become insanely weak. And who's going to take the division? It's sad to see that the Eagles could have really they had a free pass this year of all years into the playoffs. And now, you know, they're certainly between them and the Giants, the lesser of the two evils. I mean, the Redskins and probably the Cowboys by default, they'll right that ship, so to speak, very quickly. And if the Redskins can get the continuity that with a new quarterback they need, and get a more stabilized running game with Clinton Portis, then they can give that whole division a run for their money. But between the Giants and the Eagles, but mind you, the Giants certainly have way more weapons.
Plus, if you look at the NFC East, it's definitely a division right now that's not very good. And you look at it, it's just not a very good division. It's really not a very good division at all. And this division, if you look at the Cowboys, they're struggling. The Giants, they're struggling. The Redskins, they're struggling. And the Eagles, none of these teams look great at all. None of these teams look good at all. So if you look at all those teams, you just say to yourself, wow, I mean, this division is very, very, very winnable. Very winnable division.
That's what I say. To me,
by Jose Sanchez from the game. Going to talk about what's going on with him and what's going on with the show as the show makes a return to the air and expected to be on BET, I believe. So we'll definitely talk to Jose and get his thoughts on the show and his thoughts on the show coming back to the air. And it's a great show and it's an underrated show and it should be interesting to get his thoughts on what's going on with this show.
Oh, no, go for it.
Hello, y'all. Go for it.
Hello?
Hello? Y'all, go for it. All right. Guess they weren't ready to go. But you look at it now. You got the NBA training camp. Got started, preseason is underway, and last night, the Miami Heat made their debut, and LeBron and those boys stepped on the scene, and you had D-Wade, actually, who went out with a hamstring injury and to start the game, so the big three necessarily weren't really together for long, and D-Wade went out pretty much right away in the game with the hamstring injury. But you had LeBron James and Chris Bosh who went out there, and it was just a big scene down there, a preseason game. But you had everybody out there. You had the crowd out there. I mean, this is Miami now, and that's a fan base that does not really support their teams and does not really support the Heat. But they were out there in force last night for a preseason game, and they kind of scattered a little bit in the second half. But you saw a situation. You saw LeBron James doing his thing. You saw Chris Bosh doing his thing. And you saw a team that definitely will be tough. But the circus has begun there in Miami with the big three. And the circus will continue for 82 games and the playoffs and maybe an NBA Finals appearance. Maybe. But, I mean, it's... The circus has begun, and it's landed in South Beach, definitely for sure. So
you have to look at this though, and I think Paul, you know, we look at this and we do wonder too. I mean, I'm wondering, is this healthy for this organization? You know, is all of when I say this, like you said, the circus and the hoopla, and I know, I mean, I'm sure they expect, you have to expect it if you're honest. If you're an honest, like if you're LeBron James and if you're D. Wade and Bosh and certainly Riley, you have to expect this. But how can you control it? And how can you deal with something that is somewhat of an unknown for the entire, not just the organization, but for the players? No, none of them have ever dealt with this. I mean, I think the only guy that maybe has is LeBron, because the first year in the league, it was certainly everyone was LeBron crazy, but this is a totally different animal. I mean, they're there on the first day of practice, like it was like the OJ. The only thing what came to mind to me was the OJ trial. Like it was, like you said, you used the right word. It's a circus. I mean, it's, you know, and this is going to be all season long.
It definitely. I mean, it's definitely going to be an all season long thing, and it should be fun. I mean, if anything, it should be fun. And whether you hate them, love them, or whatnot, you have to admit it's going to be fun. It's definitely going to be fun.
When you say, but I don't know, Paul. I look at that and I do wonder. I mean, I mean that because, like, it certainly might be fun, but to a varying degree, you have to wonder sometimes: is this not? When I say healthy, I mean like, how can this team be coached? How can this team have a private moment when the world is watching? What'll be fun about it is watching their failure, because it will be so exploited. Their success will be, it's almost like reverse for them. The worse they do, the more you will see highlights of this. The better they do, unless they have one of those years where they're going in for all-time records, or we've heard, and I'm sure there's a level of this that's joking, but you know, can they run the game without losing a game? And it's like, this is really not a very strong roster. This is not the roster that can do that. And that's why I say they're being set up to fail. And when they fail, it's going to be nonstop.
Well, I mean, you can't, unless you win a championship, you can't live up to the hype. That's really the bottom line. Unless you win a championship, you can't live up to the hype. And so the bottom line is they have to win titles. And I don't know how many titles would make this situation a successful situation. One, two, three. I mean, how many titles would make this situation successful? How many titles do you think will make this situation successful?
Well, we talked about that, and I've always said, Paul, to me, I look at this, and I do say, and I mean this, I think this team has to walk away because I told you, this is for LeBron. This is their four-year deal. They have to walk away with three titles. They have, this is the biggest year for them, and this is the hardest year. I say that because for them not to win the title this year, you can't say – well, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they could come away from this going 3-for-3 out of the next 4 years, but it will not be a success for them because they're going to be painted in the first year. They could be very torn apart in an offseason where everyone is looking at them saying they failed in the first year. And they failed miserably in the first year, and it can lead to a lot of infighting in the offseason, a lot of finger-pointing. How well they can hold together, I think, is going to definitively mark this organization.
That's very true. I mean, it's definitely very true. And if you look at it, how well will they stay together? If there's some adversity, if they lose one or two games, does the sky fall in? You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think they're smart enough, but you know, Paul, as well as I do, they're well smarter enough to know where and how the cookie will crumble in that regard. Where, in my opinion, I see a lot of infighting is not one or two game stretches or not even this season. I see them potentially having a lot of issues down the line, middle of the season, even in the playoffs, when they're losing, maybe they get in the playoffs and they're not playing as well, or they don't make it to the finals. If they don't get into the finals, I can tell you, man, forget about it. The three of them should have. Well, I would say have this conversation today. What are they going to say? How are they going to say it? Because one chink in that armor, just forget about it. They will be torn apart all offseason.
Well, look, if they don't win a title right away, it will close in. The walls will close in a little bit. But if you look at it, there's a legitimate chance that they won't win a title this year. There's a very legitimate chance. Orlando, the Lakers still, there is a legitimate chance that they will not win a title. Very legitimate chance. I would not be surprised.
I said it when LeBron went, Paul. I'll say it now. They're not winning the title this year. The Lakers are.
I don't know if I necessarily disagree with you. I don't even know if I disagree with you. I think you're right on this situation.
I mean, I think
and
if
also,
they're going to win the
big news,
if they're going to win the title, they're going to
this is from the NFL. Randy Moss has been traded, and he returns to the Minnesota Vikings. spent 12 years with the Vikings, and then he went on to the Raiders, and then he landed in New England. New England traded him today. The Vikings will send a third-round pick in the 2011 draft in return for Moss, and New England's seventh-round pick in 2012. So Randy Moss is on the move again, and Randy Moss will go up against his boy Darrelle Revis on Monday night against the New York Jets. But as of right now, they're trying to figure out whether or not they can come up with some kind of long-term deal for Moss in Minnesota, and it's a good deal for Minnesota because you're missing Sidney Wright, his big playability. And right now you replaced him with Randy Moss, a guy who has definitely proven throughout the years that he's a big-time, bona fide superstar. And Randy wanted to get paid, and he wanted his money, and he was a little upset, and he felt like he wasn't appreciated. But right now Randy is in a different situation and playing with Brett Favre and a gunslinger, if you will. And I mean, it's a great opportunity for Randy Moss, and Minnesota.
You know as well as I do, make no mistake about it, it more than just that. This is the defining, you know, moment, I think, for their, and when I mean their, I mean the Redskins season, the Vikings season. I mean, they're going to, this is going to make or break them, because you put a Randy Moss in a lineup with Brett Favre and forget about it. I mean, they can now, they can turn this ship around because of the running game, because of Adrian Peterson. They can, you know, they could very easily, you know, lose one game the rest of the season, strictly because, I mean, Moss was playing very well this season, and I think he knew that going into this season that anything, especially with that, with the organization that he, you know, was playing for, last year they traded away, you know me in name, Paul, who they traded away, the defensive lineman.
Richard Seymour.
Right. In very, somewhat in the same regards, very unexpected, but in a contract year, they're not paying the money. Their team, too, you know, when you look at the NFL, they've won their championships, they've had their run, they have their place in history, and rightly so, but they're not looking at a 30-plus player in Seymour, 30-plus player in Moss. They're not willing to put that money out. They gave the money to Tom Brady, arguably so, in my opinion. If you knew you weren't giving the money to Moss, to me, I probably wouldn't have I don't know who you're going to surround him with. Wes Welker and his son, Edelman, it's like a joke. They have now – this team has now become, I think, you can – in terms of receivers, just forget it. I mean, Moss was the whole reason a Welker was successful. Without a guy like Moss to stretch the field, there's nothing to dump underneath the middle for a fast, short, you know, scat back to play very well in.
You're right, and Randy Moss did open the field, and Tom Brady and Randy Moss seem to have good chemistry, and they enjoy playing with one another. And it's unfortunate if you're Tom Brady. Tom Brady definitely was a guy who loved Randy Moss, and they seem to have good chemistry. I mean, that first year, Randy had 23 touchdowns. So, I mean, they definitely were on the same page and had great chemistry throughout the time that they played with one another. But I guess they decided that they didn't want to go in that direction in terms of the financial commitment, and ultimately led to Randy Moss being traded to the Minnesota Vikings.
And so you can pretty much tell, I mean, they get nothing for him. And when I say nothing, I mean to get a third rounder for a guy that you know, that's still, Paul, he's, as I said, he's having a good year. Keep in mind, you know, in terms of what he does for that organization, one of the things he does is allow them, you know, to have Wes Welker having a career first three games. And their record, by the way, wasn't so shabby. And that's the problem, is now I think they should have done this in the preseason. They should have – to do this now, if I'm in the Patriots, if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm beside myself. To get only a draft pick in return means they tank the season. They don't want to do well.
Well, I don't know if they tank the season. I mean, that's –
Paul, where are they
–
Paul, where are they?
At the end of the day, it comes down to their bottom line, and they don't want to pay the money.
That's what I say. They knew to do this move today, do this move now. If you're listening, Eagle organization, trade right now. Trade the players you definitely don't want long term. Vis-a-vis Vic, vis-a-vis Kevin Cobb. Get rid of them, dump them, because your window is about to close. And the Patriots knew they're getting nothing for him at the end of the offseason. When he doesn't get his contract, they're getting nothing for him. So get a third rounder, get something. I mean, make some other team better, because certainly I think the Vikings walk away from this with a. They get an impact player. The key for the Vikings here is a third rounder worth, you know, the rest of the season, the rest see if they can make this playoff run, because there's no guarantee either, Paul. I mean, if I'm Randy Moss, I'm going out playing like the Dickens, certainly trying to have a good year. But I can't exactly say I'm trying to stay long-term in that organization.
Well, if you're Randy Moss, I mean, you definitely enjoy playing with a Tom Brady. I mean, he's a franchise quarterback, and those franchise quarterbacks don't grow on trees. Those guys don't grow on trees. So, but again, he gets an opportunity to go back to Minnesota, an opportunity to play with a Brett Favre, maybe a Brett Favre that's on the other side of his career, but he did have a great year last year, but I think it's a Brett Favre that it's going to start acting his age now, and I think he will act his age throughout this whole season. But, again, you look at everything, you look at the situation with Moss and everything. I mean, you figured they would either take care of this guy during the season or let him just play through and just move on with him after the season. But they didn't. They struck now, and ultimately he's now property of the Minnesota Vikings, and some have speculated that the reason for this Moss trade was because he did have a heated exchange with the Patriots quarterbacks coach Bill O'Brien. And whether or not it led to the trade, who knows? But, you know, who knows? Whether or not it led to the trade, who knows? But, again, they did have a conflict. They did have a situation. And ultimately, Randy Moss is a Minnesota Viking. The number to call the show is 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at Blog Talk Radio. .com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. You can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. We weren't expected to be joined by Jose Sanchez for the game, but that's obviously not happening, and maybe we can work out another time. But it was a big day in sports. Big day in sports, and the baseball playoffs have gotten started, and Roy Halladay, you are the man. And he started H2O. He's a big part of H2O, Halladay, Hamels, and Oswalt. And tonight he laid it out and pitched a no-no in the playoffs. First time it's happened in 54 years. Actually, the anniversary of this no-hitter is Friday, actually. So that would be the 54th anniversary of this no-hitter. And that was done by Don Larson, which he had a perfect game. And Halladay was very close to a perfect game. He walked one batter. Jay Bruce was on a 3-2 count. So he had an opportunity for a perfect game tonight. It's his second no-hitter in the season. I mean, he had the no-perfect game against Florida during the regular season. Then he comes back on a big stage, the big stage, which is the playoffs, and then throws a no-no. Unbelievable. This guy is a horse. He's a beast. And he's your staff ace, and everybody complains about your Cliff Lee. And Cliff Lee had a solid game, actually, today for the Texas Rangers as they beat the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in game one of their series. So, but everybody who was angry at Ruben Amaro and the Phillies brass for trading Cliff Lee, I mean, I was one of them. I was one of those guys who felt they should have kept Lee to pair him alongside Halladay. But these guys did what they had to do with the trading deadline.
We don't want to. We don't want to get in. Let me get this out, because they did make a mistake in trading Cliff Lee, because they went out and got Roy Oswalt. I mean, there's no. We're not going to debate.
Guess essentially they did make a mistake, but on some level they have rectified the mistake and had cleaned up the mistake by bringing in Roy Oswalt. So ultimately, it was, I guess you could say it was a mistake, but at the end of the day, it really wasn't a mistake.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think, you know, is Cliff Lee going to be a better fit than Oswalt? Like you said, it is only time that will tell that.
Yeah, you're right. Time definitely will be
but
a judge
of that.
But I think
it's important to note, it is important to note that this organization definitively went into this season I think thinking maybe more of their pitching staff than met the eye, but they very to their credit, they made the right move here. They went out and got the best available pitcher and most akin to a Cliff Lee that they could get. They paid, you know, they paid the price for it, as they would have had to pay the price for a Cliff Lee, but certainly they tried to rectify. But I'm not going to let this organization off the hook by saying, well, they have a Roy Oswalt. They could have had a Cliff Lee. And last year, you know, Lee demonstrated an ability that few, I think, have, which is he just goes out and wins ball games in the postseason.
And Roy Oswalt has proven since his time with the Phillies that he can go out and win ball games. And I understand what you're saying, but ultimately the mistake has been rectified, and they have the best top three pitchers probably in the game right now in terms of their rotation. And they can come at you with those three pitchers in a short series. I mean, it's going to be some issues and it's going to be some problems going up against those guys. And this definitely was an issue and was a problem today for the Cincinnati Reds going up against Roy Halladay, because he shut them down, no-hit baseball, and ultimately the Phillies take a 1-0 lead in its best-of-five series. And Friday, Roy Oswalt steps on the mound. So H2O, see what they can do in this series, and ultimately we'll see what happens as these playoffs progress. So there's 10 more games for these Phillies teams to win, and we'll see if they can get it done. We'll definitely see if they can get this thing done. And I think they will.
I know we have two more minutes. Look ahead this week. You know, we're totally changing gears here, but I'm always, this season, I think at least, thinking about this Philadelphia Eagle team versus, I think, the Phillies. I'd like to see you compare. When we get to Sunday, who are we going to be talking more about? Are we going to endure a football season, Paul, where you and I are diehard fans? Are we going to start switching gears and recognizing that by that time, I mean, the Phillies should have wrapped up the Reds and well, the Eagles will be probably getting embarrassed again.
Well, Sunday night, it's a game that they should win again going up against the Niners. They should win that football game. But again, the Niners are a dangerous team. It's a wounded team, a wounded animal. They're 0-4, and this is kind of – you can't go on to 0-5 and expect to make the playoffs. And expect it – I mean, they're in a bad division, so there is an opportunity there. But 0-5 would be tough. So you got to be a little nervous going into this game, and especially with Kevin Cobb as your starter. And so I think there's a good possibility that the Eagles will lose this football game. I really do. But I want, real quickly, I know we got about a minute and a half left, but I wanted to get your opinion on this. In terms of Mike Vick and the way he plays the game and how reckless – he can play the game at times. And granted, he hasn't missed a lot of time because of injury. But is he a guy that you can trust? Is he
no.
a guy you can trust,
no.
you think, Jeremy?
No.
Because
no.
ultimately, you got to be – he's your quarterback, and if you hand the keys to the team, which they have, but Kevin Cobb is still here, so there's a possibility
no.
to put Kevin Cobb
no,
team at some point.
But
if you go
point.
In a totally different direction and go with Mike Vick, do you have to be a little leery of a possibility of injury? Because
no,
of the way he plays.
And that's the problem. And that's what I think, you know, again, that's what Andy Reid was successful doing in Donovan McNabb, with making him understand the minute you walked outside that pocket, you've just shortened your career. And with Vic, that's what made him all-pro, you know, a Super Bowl. He puts the Falcons in the Super Bowl, puts them on his back, and he put the Eagles on his back. But this is to a different NFL. And when he was playing, even in the last 3 years, Paul, you're watching these quarterbacks every time they step outside the pocket. They're getting – I mean, there is a not just an X on their back, but, I mean, it is a dagger. And you do see that the quarterbacks, the rule is touch them in the pocket, you're going to get fined, you're going to get suspended, you're going to get flags. Outside of the pocket, man – take him out of the game. And you and I said all the time.
Just hold that thought for next show. We want to thank all who listen to our show. You can listen to this show or past shows at blogtalkradio.com/PN. That's blogtalkradio.com/weekend. For Jeremy Esprit, this is Paul Gant.